Alan Kring Productions in association with Emergent Light Studio presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5 for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 12, delivered on September 26.
Today, annuities and perpetuities. Before we get to the content of the lecture, just a quick look at the markets. So tell me, sir, was this a good day or a bad day? Not all right, but it started as a slaughterhouse, and there was a little bit of recovery through the day as it proceeded, but we still ended down for the day, enough to be of concern that there is more and more negative sentiment building in the market. We're seeing more bad days than good days, and in this case, we clearly had a flight from equities, and we'll see if it went to bonds, and it certainly didn't. Bonds fell in price too. So this would have been the second stage of a flight to quality. Gold was almost flat. It was up for most of the day, and then it began to back off, and that was most likely because there was money pulling out of gold and coming back into the stocks by the end of the day. As you can see, in mid-morning, there was a steep drop-off as the bears took control. And through the midday, the bulls had their fun. And then the bulls began to pull it out at the end, although there was a steep drop-off right here. See this surge of trading at the end? That was investors bailing out of equities again towards the end of the day. So what does that mean for tomorrow? We might see a down start to the day tomorrow if that negative sentiment continues. The negative sentiment can be attributed to many things. You'll see some saying it's because of the political crisis in Washington that it's building. Not maybe so likely that, because the question would be, how is that specifically affecting the economy? And not so much in the short run. There's probably other factors. The most important feature to notice is that, as we have seen in previous days, compared to the moving average of 52-week volume per day, today was a very quiet day, less than half of the normal volume. And we keep seeing that. The heavy investors staying off on the sidelines, waiting to see what happens next. This kind of quiet is that quiet before the storm. Does this mean that the crash is imminent? No, it certainly doesn't. But we are seeing light volume, more bad days than good days, so we are playing on the fringes of a significant market correction. What does that mean for you? Well, a recession probably in the spring begins, and so you need to be out there finding your jobs, your internships, especially for most of you now. By January or February, it's very much too late to get internships anyway, and if the economy is turning sour, that's going to quickly turn off the spigots of job creation as employers pull back and start bracing for lower revenues coming into their company by cutting costs. So if you're going to look for a job, this is the time to do it before things get really dark down the road a little ways. Of course, you can also still stay as a student, and that's one of the things we see during recessions is student enrollments go up because it's the opportunity cost of going to college goes down because there aren't as many jobs to get. So one way or the other, this does impact you specifically and directly in as far as what this means about the economy as a whole. As investors, the last few days have been a rather bad scenario, as I can attest from my own portfolios. So it might be not the best time to be buying stocks right now. That does not mean you can't invest. There are stocks that perform well in down markets. There is also, I've already shown you, how you can bet on a down market by short selling. Risky stuff to do, but at the same time, it's not a place where you stop investing. You still invest, but you start thinking about how you invest in a world that is getting a little bit less optimistic, less bullish, shall I say. So that's your day brightener right there. And now moving on to today, today is annuities and perpetuities. And it is a calculator-based day. I may mention Excel a few times, so by all means, if you have a calculator or one on your computer, get it out now so that we can just do some practical problems. And the way I do this is much more aiming at do the problems, get the skill set down, and then we can talk later about the equations and the theory. Yeah. It's a 52-week, so in other words, that would be about 360 days, something along that line. And it's a moving average because it moves forward, the average from day to day of 52 weeks.
So all the low averages that we've been seeing, those are going to affect?
They are, but only minimally because you've got a huge amount of information in there. But you're right. That's why we have call it, that's why you always want to do a moving average so that, or a weighted moving average. In a weighted moving average, you would take the 52 weeks and you would weight the front more than the back or the back more than the front. But even in a direct one, if you've got just a straight moving average, just add up the volumes for the 52 weeks day by day and then divide by that number of days. But yeah, this one won't be affected much by what's happening now unless it keeps happening over the next few weeks. But for now, even if it is having an impact, it's obvious that there's been a lot more active volume in previous weeks than there is right now. And as a matter of fact, there are all kinds of twists and turns on moving averages you can play. But we still see that's quiet, and that is really creepy. And it's the kind of thing that, I mean, regardless of what you're doing in your life, a quiet, when there's been such activity for so long, the quiet is really kind of disturbing to us. But moving on to today's lecture, if I have a series of cash flows here, sir, money coming in every week, what do you call that? Let's try annuity.
Okay.
An annuity is simply a stream of cash flows. That's all it is, just a stream of cash flows. Now, if it's the same one every time, we call it level. If the cash flows occur at the beginnings of the period, it's an annuity due. If they occur at the end of the period, it's an ordinary annuity. So, ma'am, when we take out a car loan, you're going to have to pay an annuity to the bank, a stream of payments. Is that going to be an annuity due or an ordinary annuity?
Just depends.
When you take out a car loan, do you have to make your payment before you drive first payment before you drive the car off the lot, or do you pay it at the end of the month? You don't know.
Yeah.
Moving along here, that's an ordinary annuity. You pay it at the end of the month. Okay. See, you learn something practical in this class. Now, that's typically the way consumer loan annuities. The payments you make are an annuity to the bank. And typically, consumer loans, you make your payments. Your first payment comes at the end of 1 month after you've gotten your loan. Then the next one comes a month later. So that would be an ordinary annuity. Now let's take a scenario here. I'm finding someone who looks not like he is not waiting to be bothered. So you're looking that way to try to ignore me. So let me. Okay, sir, you're a typical ISU college student. You're having a good time. You might show up to class every now and then. Weekends are great. You know, you go to parties where you visit with young ladies named Addie and Molly. And life is good. It's wonderful. But you have found a girlfriend. Girl, right? Okay. I have to watch myself anymore, for God's sake. I mean, it's not like it used to be. Okay. Now, you've been having a great time with her for months, and then she says something to you that absolutely changes your life. I mean, this is the kind of thing. She says, "We are having a baby." And, of course, in your mind, you say, "Oh, hell no." Then you're searching Amazon.com for straight razors to kill yourself. Well, you start getting into it. You're going to be a responsible son of a bitch. You know, you start wearing polo shirts and you comb your hair. And you say, "Okay, I can do this." And then the baby is born. And I mean, trust me on this. You're going to leave that delivery room. You're going to be exhausted. I mean, that is just really hard on us guys. Okay? I mean, you know, you need to go out and find something to drink. And then you realize, okay, I have got to get this kid ready for everything that's going to come at him. And that means I want that kid to go to college. So I'm going to go to the bank right away, and I am going to put in an amount of money. And every year on the kid's birthday, I'm going to put more money, the same amount, in every year into an education, fund. And you quickly research and you say, okay, what's it going to cost? If I want that kid on his 18th birthday to have enough money for 4 full years at Illinois State University, and it comes up to be this amount. Oh, gee, whoa, that is a lot of money. Damn, okay, so the question would be, okay, we've got... You've found this education fund that's going to pay 3.59% annual interest. And you will be putting them in, the payments in, each year. At year 0, year 1, year 2. And then you're going to put in the last payment on the 17th birthday for a total of 18 payments. And then you'll let it ride the whole amount to the 18th birthday. And then you'll pull it out and pay for the... 4 years of college. Ready? How much do you have to put in every year to pull this trick? It's actually, I mean, these used to be such a pain in the butt to do, but with Excel and with these financial calculators, it's really easy. Now, I'm going to show you what you do right here on this TI, virtual TI calculator. And like I said, the best way for you to be able to do these problems is just to do them. So you're going to do apps, finance, TVM solver, which is 1. Now, the N, you're going to, how many payments are you going to put in? In this case, it will be 18. There's no every half year or anything like that. You're going to do it every year, so there's just going to be 18 flat payments. I percent, you just key in the 3.59%. And remember, with apps, you put in the percent. If we're doing real math, arithmetic or whatever, we have to put it in decimal, the real thing. Now, there is no present value. There is no now lump of money. You're not putting in a kicker up front. You just want to put in flat level 18 payments. So we're going to go down here. The payments, we don't know. Don't clear that. Don't change it if it's already a number. Just leave it alone. We'll come back to it and use that for our solve. Now, the future value is what we have. We want that thing, after 18 years, to be $250,000. So the future value is $250,000. Now, you go down here. P over Y, leave the P over Y and the C over Y at 1. Don't play with those. Go down here. Do these payments occur at the end of every period or at the beginning? Talk to me. What say you? When is he putting in his first payment?
Oh, now.
Right. So these are going to at the beginning, at each birthday, and then the last payment will be put in, and then it will ride. So this is, you have to toggle to go over to the begin and just hit enter, and now you're ready. But that's where you can get killed in these problems. Trust me on that. It's doing that, knowing whether it's beginning or ending. Okay, so now we're going to go back up to PMT. And we're going to do, put it on the cursor on PMT alpha solve. $9,770. Boy, did you make a mistake, son. $9,770 and some change, 15 cents. If you do that every year on the kid's birthday, the first one at birthday zero, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, you will have $250,000 in there on his 18th birthday. That is financial planning. If you're interested, I can direct you. We have a great financial planning institute here. We have a minor. Eventually, we'll have a major. All we do is we say, all right, tell us your goals. You know, well, we've got a kid who's 7 going to college, we want, and 3 going to college. We'd like to buy a new car every 3 years and, you know, maybe buy a vacation home and retire. All we do is we just take each component, get its payment, and then we say, all right, every year, every month, you write us a check for the sum of these payments, and we will make sure that all of your goals happen. That is what we do in financial planning. It's all done on Excel spreadsheets, and it's not really hard math at all, because we let the heavy lifting of the calculations be done by the computing engine. But the real problem, of course, and I think I mentioned this before, is these people who decide that they're going to blow the whole scheme by taking money out somewhere along the line for some unplanned thing. And then, of course, we have to redo all the calculations. And, of course, every payment after that, they write a check to us, will have to be more to recoup and recover the funding stream. But other than that, and also unexpected life events, we also have to deal with, too. And that's one reason, one of the components of a financial plan for a family or for a trust or for whatever is to have a contingent pool. In other words, this other amount that you're paying for something that we don't foresee happening, like a major illness that's not covered by insurance or something like that. But anyway, this is what it's about. Yeah. How do I get what? This? Oh, okay, let me come back out one more time. You just say apps. Number 1, you can key 1 or put the toggle on that 1, and the TVM solver, and you're there. Now, there, you notice when I came out of this, went into that finance, there are all these other ones along the way that are actually, I'm going to show you how to use quite a few of them, and they save you a lot of calculation where you can make mistakes like I always seem to make. But moving on to another problem, let's try something else. Let's come back out, second quit. I'm trying to think. Who should I ask? Madam, I want you to think of a nice car that you want to buy. New car. It's time you had a good car. We're not talking about one of those, what are those ugly box cars, the Soul is it called or something like that? I mean, don't they recall for ugly? I don't. Anyway, okay, give me a nice car you'd like.
Maybe like a brand new Camry.
A Camry, a good choice. They're elegant, they're stylish, and it's something that we could say, all right. And I'm going to see what a Camry, definitely an outstanding choice for a car. Right now, a Camry is running $28,250. That's MSRP. You can probably work that down some. And then with tax and title, let's just say you're going to finance $28,250. Okay. What are your payments going to be every month? Now, let's say that your APR, let me try something here. One of our fine companies here in town, our fine check rates. Okay, model year, a 2019. Loan to value ratio of 100% is a 2.99%. That's decent. That would be for 66 months. That would be 5.5 years. Okay. So the APR is 2.99% for 5.5 years. We can see right now what your payments are going to be so that you can have that dream vehicle that you've been thinking about. I'd recommend black. It's so tasteful. Yes, absolutely. Okay, now we go back here to the calculator. Apps, Finance, TVM Solver. Now in this case, 5.5 years, of course we already know this, times 12 payments per year. So that's 66 months, as they said. Now your 2.99%, don't forget to divide it by 12 periods per year. Now this time, our price value. We know what the price is. PV is present value, price value. Don't forget to always put it in as a negative. And that's $28,250. Now, don't play with the payment. Don't clear it or anything. That'll get you an error. There's no kicker at the end. There's no future. Now, the only time in a car loan or a consumer loan you'd have something there at the end is with a car, if you're doing a leasing agreement. Because those usually have some amount you would pay at the end if you want to keep the car. But in a normal car loan, you're just going to amortize this thing down until you owe nothing at the end. Now, the other thing is, this is an ordinary annuity. 1 month after you get the loan is your first payment. So we would toggle to end. I can't emphasize this enough. There are a couple of other places in this course where we use TVM Solver. And sometimes it'll be begin, sometimes it'll be end. Make sure that you got on the right one, because it might be on the wrong one from your previous calculation. Now we just go back up to payment, PMT, and alpha solve, which is the enter button. your payments would be $464.72 a month. There you go. That's all there is to it. This is not complicated at all. As long as you just don't panic when you're doing this, just open the calculator. Now, Excel can do this too. Funniest thing is that the calculator is a heck of a lot easier than Excel for this. You have to key in this PV function and all that. A couple of questions now. You're thinking to yourself, all right, I'm going to go second quit here. You're thinking to yourself, you know, I want a new car every 3 years. You're that kind of a person. You got to stay with the times. I mean, iPhone 12 this year, iPhone 20 3 years from now. Looks like it's the same phone, but you have to buy the new one. Okay, so let's talk about it. How much would still be on the loan after that time? Well, now, the TI calculator still has your last numbers from the TVM solver. Watch. Now I'm going to do apps, finance, and I'm going to go clear down here to BAL, which is 9. And I'm going to hit enter. Now you're going to have to tell it the balance in the same period notation that you did the thing in TVM Solver. That was in months, so you're going to want to put in 3 years times 12 months. And then say, enter. You still owe $13,417.22. See how easy that was? I mean, if you did this with the formula, it's considerably more like work. But you can use the balance to just blow this thing down. So the question would be then, okay, is that car going to be worth more or less than $13,417? Now, let's say that at year three, you want to do this, your car has a trade-in value of $14,000. We would say that you are right side up on the loan. If your car was worth less than what you owe on it, let's say it was worth $12,500, we would say that you are upside down on the loan. Right side up, value is greater than balance. Again, right side up, value is greater than balance. Upside down, balance is greater than value. Upside down, balance is greater than value. This is really important in an economy, as I will show you in just a few minutes. You see, long-term loans amortize very slowly at first. In other words, you are bringing down the balance very slowly at first, which means that if the market value of your asset drops even a little, you're upside down. We'll get to that one in a minute here. But I need to show you a side calculation. There is, if you are compounding more than once a year, your APR really isn't telling you the actual interest rate that you're paying. There's another rate which takes into account the fact that the interest rate is compounding every period. We call this the effective rate. Now, algebraically, all you do is you take 1 plus the APR divided by the number of compoundings per year. And you raise that to the number of compoundings per year. Minus 1. It doesn't have anything to do with how long the loan is. It doesn't have anything to do with the amount of the loan. The effective rate, now let me show you for the problem what we just did here with the car loan. We would do 1 plus the APR. Now this is actual math, so we have to put it in as a decimal, 0.0299. Divided by 12 compoundings per year, close the parenthesis, and then raise that to the number of compoundings per year, to the 12th power, minus 1. Notice the keystrokes that I did. Now, that equals, so in other words, the actual interest rate, the effective rate, is 3.03%, not 2.99%. Now, this isn't too much here, but it does create more of an impact at a higher rate or at more compoundings per year. Interestingly, the faster you pay, the more accelerated your payments, the higher the effective rate is. Suppose you'd said, I want to make 2 payments every month, one at the halfway point of every month, and one. So in other words, there would be 24 compoundings per year, 1 plus 0.0299 divided by 24 to the 24th power, minus 1. Now, it's virtually negligible there. It's bigger if these interest rates are so darned attractive. I ought to get a new car. Okay. But anyway, now let me show you. You don't have to do it this way. You could actually say apps, finance, and if you go down far enough in your menu, you'll see EFF. That's C. Enter. Now, in order to use the effective rate function, you put in the, 2.99. You put in the APR. You put in a comma, and then you tell it how many compoundings per year, which is 12. And it will do the legwork for you. There it is. Did you see that? I mean, this isn't that hard to do, the arithmetic. The only thing is, if you make a calculator mistake, you could get the wrong answer. But other than that, this is actually pretty darned easy to do. So, I mean, you can do it either way. Now, a more difficult problem. And I really want to show you how you can trick the TVM solver into doing it, but I will not do that. Madam, I died and I gave you money because it turned out you were my long-lost daughter. May God help you. You should see what happens at about 40. Gee whiz. Downhill, you know, handball on the curb. Okay. But I said, okay, I left you $50,000. And you say to yourself, okay, I want to put that in the bank. Let me get that money doing something. And I'd like to know how long it will be before I have $250,000. I'm just going to put that in the bank in one of those long-term accounts where I lock it down So you invest $25,000 in an account that pays 4.19% compounded quarterly. How long will it take to turn that into a quarter of $1 million, $250,000. First, the algebra way. Remember the formula. For a lump sum, future value equals the present value times 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the number of periods. That's where we start. Okay. Well, I want to do $250,000 FV equals present value $50,000 times 1 plus 0.0419 over 4 to the 4 times X years. Yes. Oh, 25,000. I'm sorry. I'm just testing. Wait. You just didn't see that two there. Really? 25,000. You saw a zero there. Yeah, what the hell? Why don't I just go to a home and stay? Last year I did a No, 2 years ago, I did this presentation at a retirement home, and as a gesture of kindness, I donated 4 of my artworks. There were all these beautiful sunsets. Yeah, it was only a little later that it occurred to me that putting sunsets where old people can see them every time they walk down the hall might not be the best, most sensitive thing in the world to do. But anyway. Okay. We're solving for an exponent. If you remember algebra, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to want to divide off the 25,000. We've got to get, we're going after this thing right here. So the first thing we're going to do is peel that off. We get 10 equals 1 plus 0.0419 over 4. To the 4x. And now we face solving for an unknown in an exponent. Do you remember how to do that? I'm sure you've got that. Yeah. Yes, you have to use logarithms. Logarithms are these weird little animals. It's a function. They were invented by a guy about 400 years ago, I think it was. Oh, yeah, 300 years ago, something along that line. He later went nuts. He actually did. At the end of his life, he was convinced that the world was going to come to an end the next year and that the Pope was the Antichrist. That's what happens to you if you use logarithms too much. Okay, we're going to have to take, you can use the common log or the natural log. I'm just going to use natural log 10 equals natural log 1 plus 0.0419 over 4 to the 4x. The reason we do that is simple. A log of an exponent You can take the exponent out to the front and make it just a multiplication. So log of 10 equals 4x times the log of 1 plus 0.0419 over 4. Now, I strongly recommend that you don't try to get numbers yet. Just treat, see this log 10 and this log of 1 plus 0.0419 over 4? They're just numbers. They're just numbers. They're just like irrational numbers, but they're numbers. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to peel them off the x so that at the end, the log of 10 over 4 times the log of 1 plus 0.0419 over 4 equals x. Now, for heaven's sake, if you can get it this far, just push it into the calculator. Don't try to get these little pieces of it and then divide them off on each other. Just get it all in one stroke. And I'm going to do that. This calculator turned off. The battery must be low on the calculator. Anyway, log ln 10, close the parenthesis, divided by, now you're going to open up parentheses. Watch it when you're in this situation, because you want to trap the whole denominator. So I'm going to open parenthesis, and then I'm going to say the 4 times log. Now, it opened a parenthesis on its own for me to do 1 plus 0.0419 divided by 4. Close the parenthesis. Now, here's a caution to you, and I'm sure I said this before. You can get into parenthesis rabbit holes, and this is especially true in Excel. It's not proof that you've done it right, but it actually usually gets you out of not doing the right number of parentheses. Every open parenthesis is a count up. Every closed parenthesis is a count down. You should end with 0. So watch. Open, there's 1. It closed, 0. Open, we're back to 1. Open again, that's 2. Now we find a close, that's 1, and there's 0. I count the parentheses in Excel all the time, especially if you've got more complicated formulas. And this should give me my answer. 55 years. Boy, are you going to wait a long time. 55 years. You say, oh, well, wait a minute, fat boy. Why don't you tell me I want a more accuracy? Now, I'm going to do this just to irritate the hell out of you. You want to know how many years and months? Okay, fine. Subtract the 55. And then multiply the result times 12 months per year. So it's actually 55 years and 2 months. Okay, you want the number of days? Well, fine. So it's 55 years, 2 months, subtract off the 2, and then take the result times the average 30 days per month. It's 55 years, 2 months, and 26 days. And you say, still not good enough, moose breath. Subtract off the 26 days, and you say, okay, there are 24 hours in a day, so we times the result by 24, and we are now down to 55 days, 2 months, 26 days and 23 minutes. Is that right? I am so confused. But anyway, this is how you can hammer it down to whatever. Now, I don't do this in the Excel in the problems that you see in Cengage, but Cengage puts its own in there, and they might ask you, well, how many months and days is it? So, you know at least how to do it. And I don't know how many of you had ever seen that before, but, it's a really great thing to get a party really lit. Anyway, okay, clear that. Now, is there a way you could do this with the time value of money solver? Well, actually, there is. Apps, Finance, TVM Solver. What's your percentage rate? And that, in this case, is 4.19. Notice I just skipped over the N. Leave it alone. Don't clear it, or you'll get an error. You might. 4.19 divided by 4. It's quarterly compounding. Bring it down, okay? And we're going to have, well, how much do you have now? $25,000. How much do you want? Now, there's no payments in this, so that's zero. But how much do you want? Oh, do you see what I did wrong? I didn't put a negative. Present value, always put in negative. Negative 25,000. Bring it down. Now, notice I did this in quarters. So when I get my N, that will be quarters. Because I did the interest rate in quarters, my answer will be in quarters, I think. Okay, now $250,000 is what you are wanting in the future. And we're going to toggle this down to the beginning because you're putting the money in right now. Now you go back up to N and you say alpha solve. Like I said, you put in the interest quarterly. Remember how I divided by 4? So it's going to spit you out an answer in quarters. So you just run over to the end. This is important. We have to do this later in the course. Where you give it in quarters or months or a half years, and you get your answers back. So in this case, I'm going to have to divide 220.966 by 4. And then don't hit enter, just go down. There it is. No logarithms. The good thing about this is you don't have to do logs. The bad thing is you have to remember to key in, remember that your I is a quarterly, and remember to put the payments at begin, and then your N is going to come out in the same thing you put your interest rate in. You put your interest rate in as quarterly, then you're going to get your number of periods out as quarters. So you have to remember to divide that by the 4. But it gets you your answer. The TVM solver can actually deal with anything that you would face in the in terms of calculating something. Now there's another way that I won't take the time to show you. But I could say, second quit. If you do apps, finance, one of these, time value of money, solve for N, that will do the same trick. But if I give you too many of these, it just starts to fog you. So I like to kind of pivot on the TVM solver. But you can get a lot of these answers. It has a specialized, you can find out the time values, you can solve for the future value if you invest money now. You can solve for the present value. You can even solve for the interest rate that would cause some amount now to become some amount later. So essentially, you've got all of these, but like I said, the TVM solver sort of does all of them. You can just choose whichever one you want to do alpha solve on. Okay, now, the last thing is to go back to that right side up, upside down. You have decided that you are going to become wealthy and very famous. which of course means that you are going to major not in finance, but in accounting. But no, you're going to major in finance. And you're going to become the next Warren Buffett or whatever. And so, in that regard, you want to, your dream home, madam, is a $220,000 house in Schaumburg, okay? Don't hate. The Woodfield Mall has a cheesecake factory right there in it, okay? So, no, don't you. Red Velvet Cheesecake, that's how I become fat in one day. Okay, here we go. You've chosen your house. It's a four-bedroom, three-and-a-half-bath, nice little number, about a quarter of a mile from the mall, and it has a nice play area for the kids. You have a little bit of land, you know, for the torture dungeon you keep underneath and all that, right? I mean, you know, you've got to have a hobby. So, $220,000, APR is 3.69% monthly payments on a 30-year fixed-rate loan mortgage. Wonderful. Good. See what your payments are going to be. Now, these are monthly payments, so we're going to go to the TVM solver here. Okay, so that would be 30 years times 12 payments per year. Just go down. I percent is 3.69 divided up 12 periods per year. The price value of the home, negative $220,000. There's no future value, so we can zero that one. And our payments will be at the end of every month, 1 month after you get the loan. Now we go back up and we get the payments. I'm trying to get to the point where you can just do this with your eyes closed almost. Alpha solve, nothing unusual. We got, your payments are going to be $1,011.38 a month. Okay? Now the purpose of this exercise, I'm going to say second quit. You decide, you want to see how much, now remember, the calculator's still got those numbers in its registries. So we're going to say apps finance, and we say, well, how much do I still owe after 10 years? Balance. Now, remember that you told it in months, so now we have to go and say 10 years times 12 months per year. You still owe $171,486 or $87. So you have amortized in 10 years only about $50,000 of a $220,000 loan. That's the first thing. Now, let's say, okay, how much interest did I pay over those 10 years, apps, finance, go down to the sigma INT, A, sum of interest. So in this one, I have to say from period one on through to period 120. 10 years times 12 months. You have paid a staggering $72,852 in interest over those 10 years. About $7,300 in interest. Now, if the economy goes south and your house drops in value strongly, as might happen in a bad recession, you will be upside down. If your house value falls to 165, you're upside down. You'll default. There's no reason for you to keep the house. You'll just say, here, bank, have it back. That's it. Game over. This is why we have such crashes of housing markets, why recessions get so bad, is because if the housing market prices go down, lots and lots, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people go upside down on their home loans. They just default. They just walk away. There's no housing bubble. There's no such thing. It's just that prices fall, and so people go upside down, and they default on their loans. And it's the rational thing to do. You owe more than it's worth, you walk away. Keep that in mind. Now, I'm going to give you a quiz, and then that's all I have for you today. I thank you.